Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Each week, we select from a menu of topics that can impact business growth to discuss with experts from a wide variety of disciplines. And today at the cafe, I'm excited to have Joe Don Whitlock-Karnowski, Global Marketing Director of UPS Capital, to discuss global strategies to grow your business. Joe Don, welcome.
Thank you, Angelo. Happy to be here.
Yeah, before we get things started, we actually have a guest in the studio with us, and why don't we get her to say hello? This is a future businesswoman, and what's your name, honey?
Taylor Cordell.
Yeah, and she's 10 years old, and so those of you listening out there, I want you to track her, because in about 10 or 15 years from now, you are going to want to hire this young girl. I am so impressed. In fifth grade, she had an interest to come here and listen to the show to learn about business. So I'm not kidding out there in Facebook land. Keep an eye on this girl, because she is going to be a force to be reckoned with. You all good? Okay. So to get things started,
yeah.
Why don't we talk, give me a little bit of background on yourself and the company that you work for, what your role is, and so we can get the audience to understand and keep things in context.
Sure, absolutely. Well, as mentioned, Joe Don Whitlock-Karnowski. I am the Global Field Marketing Director for UPS Capital. Some of my responsibilities and my main responsibilities for the organization are to support and build organic and inorganic strategies globally, support product launches, create new revenue campaigns, and watch marketing trends. I do have global responsibilities. So I have staff in all of our major regions, which is in our Europe office in Brazil, or excuse me, in Brussels, and our Americas office down in Mexico City, Asia office in Hong Kong. And then I also have a manager who is responsible for our high value division, and that is for Parcel Pro, which is located here in Torrance near Los Angeles. So I get to do a lot of interesting global work, mainly on the strategy side, which is very exciting. Outside of that, I've done a lot of special assignments. I have done new product support launches in Colombia, Brazil, Brussels, UK, Germany. Those were all very exciting. But I think to top off my career and highlight my career was when I was selected to be the lead integration for an M&A project in Asia. So I spent 3 months in Asia integrating two companies that we had acquired, Parcel Pro and G4SI, in Hong Kong, Thailand, Singapore, and Japan. And it was an exhilarating experience where I learned a lot about international business. And just got to work really well with the teams in those countries and learn the culture and how they do business in those areas. And like I said, it was just an absolute highlight and an awesome opportunity that I got to enjoy a few years ago.
Wow, what an incredible background. Now, if I remember from your LinkedIn, you've been with UPS for quite a while.
Almost 19 years.
Yeah, so you've really grown up the ladder. And international is something special. I was, not in your capacity, but I was very fortunate to be an international product manager actually for an oil and gas company. Mm-hmm. So I got to spend a lot of time in Southeast Asia chasing down oil rigs and stuff like that. And that's a whole nother life and a whole nother conversation. But, you know, international marketing is, it's different in the sense, because we're not dealing with just different languages. We got different cultures, different countries, different cultures within those countries, different dialects in the way you communicate. And so that's a big challenge. And how do you go about when you go into a market, and I'm already off our questions, but when you go into a market and you start to understand, you know, the makeup of that country, let's say, how do you go about that? What's your process?
Yeah, well, first of all, you do that research prior to going to the country.
Right.
You don't want to learn while you're there. You do as much research prior to going into the country. You learn about your project and you do as much research as you can with the team. I've always had teams that have supported me and my team prior to going into a country and trying to learn what it is we need to get done before even going. So we have a very well vetted project plan that has been well vetted by many stakeholders prior to a team going into a country. So, for example, the M&A project, there was months leading into what was actually going to be accomplished prior to going into the country. And then you brief yourself, and the companies also brief you on how to behave in different cultural settings.
Sure, absolutely.
So doing business in Japan is very different than doing it in Thailand, which is very different than doing it in Singapore and Hong Kong. So being very aware of the cultural differences and respectful of those those as you're coming in and working with the different communities and those employees who work in those countries.
Oh, that's fascinating. I know in situations, and I've been in advertising, we look at concept testing and copy testing and changing messages to the verbiage of the country, if you will. You have to be so careful. We've had some interesting stories to tell. Again, another story for another time. But there's so much complexity that really goes into in dealing in these different foreign countries. Mm-hmm. So let's talk. We are now in 2019. You are my first guest of 2019. Thank you so much. And we're probably, I'm going to guess this, we have 361 days, give or take, or whatever, less than that, left in the year. So let's... What some great advice can you give the audience when they really start thinking about strategy and preparing for 2019 to make sure they have a banner year?
Yeah, and I think you just said it. What is your strategy going into 2019? And I think one of the most important components for any business is to have a strategy, have a plan, have a roadmap, have some formally well-vetted tool that communicates what it is that you want to accomplish. And so the tool that I lean on and I like to use the most is a strategy tree. So I start with the very beginning of what is the overall objective of the organization and how does my department fit within that overall objection that we want to get done, and then breaking it down to sub-strategies. So for example, let's just say we want to grow, or a listener wants to grow their business by $10 to $20 million. That's your overall objective of what you want to get done. And then underneath that are your sub-strategies. So it's like a strategy tree. You start at the top and then you kind of filter down the data. The next layer you should be looking at is what are those sub-strategies? And in those sub-strategies, how do they support the overall strategy? So for example, a sub-strategy of the example that I gave earlier of the $10 to $20 million in growth would be conversion. You want to convert new accounts. If you're an established business, you want to retain your business. That's another box that you want to build. New product enhancement, another box that would be underneath the tree, or an international expansion. So those would be four boxes that would fit underneath the initial umbrella box. And then underneath that are your tactics. So you always have to think within a strategy tree, you have your what, but then you have to have your how. Mm-hmm. So underneath your what of conversion, well, how? So building your tactic out. So for conversion, build a lead list. How are you going to go about tactically building a lead list to convert customers? That's going to roll up to your overall $10 to million growth plan. With your retention, what is your churn strategy? So what are you doing to create a churn reduction strategy within your organization? What are those tactics? What do they involve? Who do they involve? And then how does that roll up? If you move over to the third one we mentioned was the new product enhancement. Well, what is it? What do you have to do? Is there quantitative or qualitative research that needs to be done on the current product set that you have? Do you need to conduct surveys to see if your customers are fully satisfied with your product, or do you need to run some analytics to see if you're missing a geo area? That would be another tactic. And then internationally, is there a market you're missing? Is there an open market around the world, a geo, where your product could do really well and be successful that you're not capitalizing at this time, and run those tactics underneath that sub-strategy all rolling in? So I'm a huge fan of strategy trees. I think they're a tool that communicate. I think that they're a tool that really share cross-departmentally and provide guidance and clarity throughout the entire organization of what it is you want to accomplish in the next year. And then it gives you a focused approach,
right,
so that you don't get distracted with some of the day-to-days.
Yeah, the shiny objects, right?
Exactly. The shiny pennies to miss the dollar. You don't get distracted by that, because you say, my four pillars that I want to work on this is 1, 2, 3, and 4. And you stay focused on that, all the meanwhile knowing that normal course of business happens. And of course, we're going to be pulled off plan once in a while. But you've got that overall strategy that at the end of the day, when you try and rate your success and you rate your measure of how am I doing each month, each quarter, each year, you can go back and look at your strategy and say, hey, we nailed it. We did it. We were successful, or we missed it and we didn't do it. So as a best practice, I have a mid-year check-in with my team.
Okay.
So we just locked our plans in. I actually was on a call on the way up here and I said, it's lock and load time. Let's go. The plans are done. They're approved. They're communicated. let's go out and start executing the plan. And then mid-year, we come back and we evaluate how we've done with those
plans. So do you wait mid-year, I mean 6 months, or do you do it on a quarterly basis?
I get weekly updates.
You get weekly updates.
Yeah, so
okay.
Weekly updates on what are the tactics we're doing to drive the strategy. So I'll get those weekly from my staff. But from the overall, how are we doing? We come in and have a very comprehensive review mid-year. And that's the opportunity to really evaluate, did we have enough foresight to plan correctly, or did we miss something, or did the organization change its goals?
Right.
Sometimes that happens too.
Well, what you're talking about is strategy development. And in my role, I'm a fractional chief marketing officer, and strategy is my mantra. You know, so many times I go in to talk to a client, it's like, well, we need this, we need a tactic, we need a brochure, and it's like, time out, we got to work back up the tree. So you work for a very large organization. A lot of my audience is small to medium-sized, mid-cap market kind of things. What you're saying, though, correct me if I'm wrong, applies to those companies as well.
Absolutely.
Right? It's setting down and really laying that plan. I love the decision tree. That's a very simple analogy tool that you're using. But I think you can visually see how you can layer down or layer back up to that tree to make sure things are all working together. And same thing with the buckets. I talk about renew, recapture, and acquire. Mm-hmm. Right. And so kind of from a strategic standpoint.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things, and especially in really any business, new business is the lifeblood of any business. And so we start talking about lead generation. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about lead generation. Not only it applies to your organization, but really kind of best practices when you think about into midsize and smaller organizations.
Sure, absolutely. So when you talk about lead generation, we have this saying, and it's called boiling the ocean. So I don't like to boil the ocean. I love to be challenged by thinking I could boil the ocean, but in reality sets in, and I know I could never boil the ocean. So we start with focus. What is it from a lead gen perspective? Are we focusing on who is our target market, and what does that box look like? So really drawing out a box and figuring out what fits within that box and starting with that focus. So let's just say you have you're a mid-sized small company and you have CPA or accounting software. Well, it wouldn't make sense to try and get every accounting firm in the U.S. in your box.
Right.
It would make sense to figure out, well, what kind is your specialty?
What's your segmentation?
Build that into your box and then start with that focus and work your way out. The next step after you have your focus is work through the data. What is the data telling you? Data should lead you at this point to figuring out, do you have a propensity model? Do you have a behavior model? Do you have past models that you can look at and duplicate for success? And I love looking at two models two different ways is, how have I been successful in the past? And can I multiply that and reuse that in the next year? And where is it that I want to be successful and I haven't been in the past, but I need to be?
You talked about data. My background's also market research. Every time I say that word, I see clients get big dollar signs in their eyes going, oh my God, I can't afford that. And I always say, well, you can't afford not to do it. So what is your reliance on market research and gathering those insights? Because again, for me, that's the most powerful tool. I play in three buckets, insights, brand, and plan.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't have the insights, everything else starts to get a little weak because I'm guessing, right? So the voice of the customer and those kinds of things. So how does insights play a role in everything you do?
Insights play a tremendous role because without insights, you really don't have direction.
Right.
Your insights should direct you then to the next level because that's what you've been able to ascertain from the data that's coming through. But data doesn't have to be expensive. You can use your own data.
Can I clap for that? Thank you.
Absolutely. Any company can use your own data. I love using first level data, which is your own data because it's the truth. It's raw. It's what you've collected firsthand, and you're not relying on a second or third party to kind of dirty the data a little bit. So it all comes into discipline, though. So good data in is going to be good data that you get to work with. So that is a discipline that the whole organization needs to realize and play. But you can take your own data, your pipeline, your sales team, who they have, business cards. I mean, it can be anything from analog data to digital data, and just try and put that into a format that you can pull those insights from.
Sure. You mentioned churn, and one of the things that we're working with some predictive analytics at one point with a customer, and we are trying to get them to listen to the customer service calls, and we were after a model to predict when their customer was frankly ready to fire them because of other reasons. And so when you look at, you know, your revenue models and your customer churn models and things like that, are you use any kind of predictive analytics to monitor that?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. I wouldn't say they're to the level of, you know, what would come out of MIT.
Okay.
But they're what my team have put together to be able to predict the behavior based off of current terms that we've seen based off of a data set. So, again, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money on trying to figure out a predictive analysis or data that would come out of or methodology that would come out of MIT. You can do your own by looking at past behaviors of when customers have left and then what are the trigger points. So identifying triggers of what has caused them to leave and then overlaying data and seeing if you're seeing consistency. And if you're seeing empirical consistency, then you know you've got a good model that you can apply to the rest of your data set and then use that moving forward to offset churn. The important thing is when you're working with a churn model and you're not confident in it is to be able to measure it, though, because you don't want to rely 100% on it and just let it run. You need to be testing and making sure that when customers are leaving, you're noting and you have all of the follow-up so that you can see when a customer is leaving and if your model is actually working.
Do you have multiple measurement tools that are going on all at a given time and various KPIs in a sense that you're looking at?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about research, qual, quant, predictive, artificial intelligence. I mean, are you relying more on quantitative or qualitative or kind of a combination thereof?
Combination. The voice of the customer is the priority. So, and that will come from your quantitative data. And so, or excuse me, from your qualitative data. So we will always look at the numbers. They will lead us from a quantitative standpoint, but we'll always want to listen to the voice of the customer because they're going to give us, they're going to fill in the blanks for us. Mm-hmm. So data is very black and white, as you know, from your background. It's very black and white and it can tell you what, you know, can drive you in the direction you need to go, but the customer is going to give you the color and the surveys that you need to fill in and give the whole story. So when I present, I like to look at both the quantitative and the qualitative. I don't rely on, you know, just one area. I like to pull the voice of the customer in so that we can see what their experience is and then have that complement the entire story so that we've got that full vetted, I think, 360 view.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of what their perception is on what it may be.
Yeah, I always used to say with quantitative, we're building the skeleton, but the qualitative brings the life, the personality, the flesh and blood to what's going on.
Yeah.
So let's continue with the voice of the customer. And let's talk about the customer. And I'm always conscious of time. We're already down to 10 minutes. Let's talk about utilizing these tools and customer journey mapping and things like that and building personas, big companies, small companies. And I've had the opportunity to work with some global companies throughout my career, from Purina to Merck and things like that. And so understanding the amount of time that goes into really doing this well. But I think it's essential that, you know, I talked to a client not too long ago and we were talking about building personas and their answer was, well, you know, I've got job titles. I go, yeah, that's not a persona, right? So why don't you talk a little bit about what you do and the value of taking the time to build those personas and how we work with those as the next part of this in helping to set the journey map.
Sure. A persona is going to give you, again, a deeper understanding of who it is that you're trying to market to. So the first step in building a persona is understanding who your main stakeholders are and whom you're targeting. So again, accounting software. If you were looking at building a journey map, it would be identifying who are the major stakeholders within that organization and being able to define them in detail to who they are and building those personas out. So you have an idea of who they are. And it's not just the idea, but it's also how do you market to them? Because each persona in a business and in an organization is going to be different. And you can't market the same to everyone. And I think that is a very strong trend that's coming up is this account-based marketing, is having an individual personalized marketing relationship with the company that you're having in and not feeling you're part of the masses. And that's where personas come in to play, is that you want to feel like you're being individually marketed to and not a part of the masses. And that's why they're important.
Are you building personas for every customer that you're going after, separate personas? I mean, I'm sure there's probably some overlaps, but you know, I always like to say if I'm in the software business and I'm trying to sell software to a company and I've got the IT guy who might be kind of recommending that they need some issues, that person may or may not be the person that does the evaluation, may not be the one that writes the check. So I have to understand the dynamics right. of all those different people right. because how I communicate with them to follow up on right. what you're saying is very different. And I think that the companies that go in, it's like one message across the board, you know, a horizontal approach is just missing the boat. And that's why I think these are so important. Mm-hmm. Now, personalization can get a little deeper. There's some tools out there mm-hmm. that literally can notice how many times you visited the website, right. how many pages you've been on, and literally pull up content to serve up based on your behavior. Right. Do you guys do that?
So drip marketing, okay. yes. And the intent and the spirit of that type of marketing is you want to be in control of your experience with the business and whom you're engaging with. And so if you send me an email and I don't open it, I'm not engaged. But if you send me an email and I open it, I'm engaging. And if there's an attachment and I open it, I'm engaging even more. And it's leading the company in whom you're doing business with to an indication that, hey, you actually want to do business with me. Now is a good time for me to have a sales rep call you mm-hmm. and see if there's interest. And so the spirit of that is engaging with you when you want to do business with me, not the other way around right. where I'm forcing myself upon you.
Well, I think, and I've seen the statistics, 75, 85%, but in the B2B world, people are doing a lot of research online before yeah. they even start to engage with the company. Yeah. And I know personally, I go out and will go online and download papers or videos or whatever it happens to be as part of my research. And of course, and I'm getting hit left and right with phone calls because they're capturing my data. But, you know, I'm just in the early stages. So to me, I think there's a strategy there about when they hit me that quickly, it's bothersome versus if I go back two or three times and now they're talking to me.
Right.
Yeah. So do you guys kind of get to that level or in your work?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We want the experience to be two-way. We don't want it to be a one-way. So we'll lead to the point where you've shown the indication that you want to be doing business with us, and that's when we'll engage with you. And so that is the point where we feel like it's a mutual relationship and not one-sided because okay. of the indicators that you've presented as a user on how we've been communicating with you.
Okay. Well, the voice of the customer, again, as a researcher, is so important. And so we think about that a customer experience, right? There's customer service and there's customer experience.
Yes.
And I've had this with a woman, Denise Drummond, and Don out of Switzerland, and we talked about that extensively, and I think you guys, when I first met you mm-hmm. on your panel. So let's talk about customer experience and where is that going? What's mm-hmm. that look like in the future?
Yeah, so real quick, just to define customer experience and customer service. So customer experience is very proactive. So it's understanding who you are based off of data points, right? So I, as a marketer, am getting to know you and how you want to be engaged with. And a customer service is reactive. So you mm-hmm. think of customer experience is when I'm awed and I'm wowed because I didn't expect it. Customer service is when I need a return and I'm calling a phone number or I'm going to a service desk, right?
Yeah.
So where is customer experience going? Customer experience is going to be the future because of all of the data points, in my opinion, that we're able to capture. And there's been some fun statistics that have come out in the news lately. I think Fox announced something that Facebook has 29,000 data points.
Wow.
And then Time.com had some research that came out of Cambridge Analytica that said we had 5,000 data points on each person. So even if it's 29,000 or 5,000.
It's still a lot.
It's still a lot. I couldn't even define that on myself if I tried to count how many data points there are on me and, you know, my propensities. I don't even think I could get there. But machines are doing that. And what that's leading us to is that machine is going to know us better than ourselves. So there's location data that's also out there. They know how many times I'm going by Starbucks. The customer experience is, hey, you're driving by Starbucks. Here's a promotion. So, you know, you think of all of the different ways that now data can be used to have that experience that drives to your to what you want to do, what your propensities are. And I think that really that's going to be the future and what we're going to start to see here very, very quickly.
Wow. It's fascinating stuff. Believe it or not, we're actually coming down to our last couple minutes. So what are two recommendations or suggestions can you give our listeners to keep them on the right path to growing their business, whether it's U.S. or internationally.
Sure, absolutely. I think we started off really well by talking about strategy. If you don't have a strategy, that is my number one recommendation to you is, you know, take some of the simple steps that I gave you, build a strategy, get the organization supported behind it, and use that as your roadmap to success, and make sure that it aligns to a real goal that you can accomplish, and celebrate the successes, celebrate the failures as well, because from failures you learn.
Absolutely.
And don't be afraid of that, especially as you're small and you're nimble and you're mid-sized and you're nimble and you can recover quickly. Take advantage of that while you're at that stage. And I think the second thing is keep up with technology. Those who aren't keeping up with technology, unfortunately, I do believe will probably be passed up. Technology is moving so quickly and enhancing so much. You know, keeping up with technology now is incredibly important to do.
Well, that's investing time working on your business versus in your business, correct?
Correct.
So, yeah, I did a survey among some business leaders not too long ago, and one of the things we asked is, how much time do you spend working on your business? And it was less than 5% a month, which is really scary.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm getting the hook from the engineer. So Jodonna, how can listeners contact you or connect with you on LinkedIn, emails, and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, Jodonna Karnowski. You can link with me there. I'm on Instagram. I'm under run, work, rest, repeat. That is my life. I'm an avid runner as well, so I'm also on Instagram if you want to follow me there, but certainly on LinkedIn as well.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a very stimulating conversation. I'm sure the listeners are going to really benefit from it. So thank you again for joining us at the cafe. You can find out more about me and read my blogs or view my show videos at theponzigroup.com or connect with me on LinkedIn as well. Or you can subscribe to the show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com, or we are now on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and Streaker, and coming soon to SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and others around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.